I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Saturday, everybody. As longtime listeners to the show know, Holly and I joined this podcast in 2013, but the show has been around all the way since 2008. We had a whole series of other hosts before our time. And even though Holly and I have been digging around through our own archive for 6 years at this point, we still stumble across episodes that have just not ever caught our attention before. And that happened to me with today's classic, which is on Evliya Çelebi.
Evliya Çelebi was a 17th century traveler from the Ottoman Empire who spent more than 40 years chronicling all his journeys. This episode dates back to 2012 from previous hosts Sarah and Dublina.
So enjoy!
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And Dublina, I have a question for you.
What's that?
Have you ever kept a travel journal? I mean, I know you like to travel a lot.
I have kept, I have attempted to, but I usually end up getting them. I have a collection of beautiful journals that I've bought throughout the years. I end up taking them
started.
And I fill out a page. And then I realize there's this big competition between actually wanting to do things and having time to write about the things while I'm on vacation. And then when you get back, you get so busy that you just don't have time to re-record everything.
It happens to me too. If I'm lucky, I'll start writing on the plane ride home and maybe fill in the briefest details. So try to imagine trying to keep a travel journal for 40 years now. And imagine that your expeditions included not just classic traveler high points, you know, meals you ate, monuments you saw, people you met, that kind of thing, but events like wars and rebellions and pirate attacks. I mean, imagine having time for that.
I mean, I think I would make time to write about a pirate attack, but
That would warrant an entry for sure. So our subject today, Evliya Çelebi, is a 17th century Ottoman gentleman, and he's considered by many people to be one of the world's greatest travelers and, by extension, one of the world's greatest travel writers. He kept a 2,400 folio record of his journeys. He called it the Seyahatnami, or Book of Travels, and it's the longest travel account in Islamic literature, maybe even the longest travel account in the world.
And from about age 30 until his death in his 70s, Evliya was on the move, and for as long as he traveled, traveled, he kept on writing, covering his journeys across rivers of ice in the far northern reaches of the Ottoman Empire to the Sahara Desert and the Nile River in the south. And because Evliya went to places that many others didn't even bother to visit or at least document, his record has become a key source for archaeologists, geographers, and cultural historians. And that's why, in addition to discussing high points from Evliya's remarkable travels, we're also going to talk about the strange history of the Sahotname, which at nearly 400 years old is only now becoming an item of world interest.
But before we get to that, there's the matter of Evliya's homebound years. Of course, he didn't start traveling until he was about 30. So we mentioned Evliya was a gentleman, and in fact, his name, Chelebi, means gentleman. So appropriately enough, he grew up in the cultured atmosphere of the Ottoman court, where his father was the Sultan's chief goldsmith, and his mother was an Abkhazian, possibly a slave girl, given to the goldsmith in marriage by the Sultan, who told him, "Grand Aga, you're an old man, but God willing, from this maiden you will have an angel-like, world-adorning son." And sure enough, Evliya was born 9 months, 10 days after that, in 1611 in Istanbul. And he started his education, as other children of his class would have, at the madrasa, which was an Arabic school where he would have learned to recite the Quran, become a prayer caller. And he would have also studied languages too, Turkish, Persian, Arabic, plus Greek and Latin, and stories of Roman emperors and Alexander the Great that he picked up from the non-Muslims who worked in his father's gold shop.
And when he wasn't studying, Evliya still learned in a different way. He roamed Istanbul watching artisans, exploring mosques, and occasionally even attending court with his father. By his teens, Evliya could recite the entire Quran from memory. This took him about 8 hours to do, and he'd do it every single Thursday. And he said he was proud to have maintained this tradition through his life. It was during one of those recitations, in fact, that he got kind of his big break, in a sense. During a recital, Evliya was summoned by the reigning sultan, Murad IV, who asked him how long his recitations took. And 8 hours must have seemed like a really good answer to him, because the sultan essentially then told him that they were going to be friends.
Okay, so what does being friends with the sultan really entail? To me, it sounds a bit like pursuing a higher education, because Evliya was soon set up with a tutor, a calligraphy master, a spiritual advisor, a music teacher for music and singing, a grammar instructor, plus his old master for continued Quran studies. And so his job essentially became to read and write, you know, study during the day and night, refine his manners, dress nicely, and recite entertaining things for the Sultan, really showing off his learning. And he gives a sampling of what this usually involved in his book of travels. He recounts an early meeting where he asked the Sultan, "Okay, well, what exactly do you want to hear me recite? You know, literature, I can do Persian, Arabic, Turkish, Hebrew, Syriac, Greek, maybe a medley of musical forms, maybe a selection of different kinds of verse poetry." The Sultan actually even calls him out on showing off so much, because in between cataloging all this knowledge, this huge platter of things he can recite for the Sultan, he'd throw in puns and make witty remarks, some of them kind of risque, and polish the whole performance off by somersaulting out of the room. I mean, this kid knew how to put on a show, for sure.
So his next 2 years at court involved lots of study, beautiful books, calligraphy practice, and those audiences with the Sultan, and fancy presents as well. A silver ink pot studded with jewels was one notable one, and also a writing board inlaid with mother of pearl.
Good accessories for the scholar.
Yeah, a gem encrusted back scratcher, that's a bonus.
Also handy.
But he became especially valued when Murad IV was feeling down, since he could crack him up with his near constant jokes. Courtiers would hurry Evliya in, and Murad would say, quote, "Look, the dispeller of woe has arrived." Sometimes his duties would be a little more solemn, Quran recitations, leading calls to prayer, singing sad songs, things like that. Others were more outrageous, such as supervising the Sultan's wrestling matches and avoiding vomiting on the Sultan when he'd pick him up and spin him around.
Which sounds pretty nerve-wracking, not something you'd want to do to the Sultan. So it seems like with such a prestigious position, though, minus the spinning, of course, Evliya would really enjoy every moment spent in his hometown of Istanbul and at the palace. But from about age 20 onward, he was itching to get away. He wanted to get outside of the city. He had only visited towns just outside of the city walls. So to make up for that, since he didn't have travel magazines to read, he'd quiz dervishes about their travels and learn about the seven climes, the four quarters of the earth, really just make the travel bug he already had really even more intense, ready to go.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
In addition to his court connection, Evliya had family pressures keeping him at home, though, as well. In an early book, he wonders, quote, how to get free of pressure from mother and father and teacher and brother. I think that's probably a sentiment a lot of people can relate to. And it must have been on his mind a lot, because when Evliya was in his early 20s, he had a dream, but not just a dream. It was a dream of vision.
Which appears sometimes in podcasts, I've noticed.
They do. They've popped up recently, I feel like, now and again. But in this particular dream, he found himself with early Islamic saints and the Prophet Muhammad, who asked Evliya to call the morning prayer. After he was done, Evliya went back before the Prophet to ask for shafat, or intercession, but messed up and asked instead for a similar sounding word in Ottoman Turkish, seyahat, or travel. So Muhammad promises him both, plus visits to the tombs of saints and prophets,
which do end up coming along with his later travels. So according to the Ottoman historian Caroline Finkel, this type of dream vision is a common occurrence of literature from this time, and one that Evliya himself used in later accounts of his travels. But she also notes that in this case, he sounds especially genuine, like it really was a life-changing moment for him. Not that he woke up from his dream and started packing, though. It still took about 10 years before Evliya could get away, the first time accompanied by a friend visiting nearby Bursa. And on the trip back home, he decided not to tell his folks, but to set out again and head off to the North Anatolian coast to tour that region a little bit.
Since he was traveling with a newly appointed governor, this also started a trend of journeying in the entourage of various public officials. So he'd serve various functions along the way, including things like prayer caller, tax collector, courier, envoy, customs clerk, even imam. Basically anything that allowed him to tour with a retinue or run specific errands to places that he was interested in. Imagine a more practical version of his work for the Sultan, and that's kind of what it was.
Yeah, and it afforded him not only free travel, of course, a job that goes along with traveling, but a certain amount of protection, too. You've got to imagine bandits in the woods and rebels and pirates, of course, as we've already mentioned. So traveling with a group like this would have been a safer way to go. So Evliya eventually began calling himself, despite all those other professions Dublina just rattled off, world traveler and boon companion to mankind, which I think sums him up pretty well.
It does. Many of his journeys were in the company of his mother's kinsman, the one-time Grand Vizier Melik Ahmed Pasha. And they traveled to modern Ukraine, Sofia, Iran, Iraq, Transylvania, Wallachia, and Moldavia, Poland, Bosnia, just a lot of places,
all over the place.
And Evliya's range also starts to sound more impressive when you consider he was usually taking the hard way on these travels on horseback. After a 1641 shipwreck in the Black Sea, he was kind of put off sea travel.
And so swore it off completely.
All of his expeditions were overland. When he finally hopped on a boat about 30 years later, attempting to visit Cyprus, he was quickly rewarded with that pirate attack that we mentioned before. So it turned out that sea travel was just not for him.
Out of commission for all sea travel. And after Melik Ahmed died in 1662, Evliya no longer had this major patron, this man who he was mostly traveling with. But according to Carolyn Finkel's article on him in History Today, he also didn't have anything stopping him anymore from going exactly where he pleased. So he ended up going to work as a cavalryman and serving in several major engagements before taking part in a really notable peace mission to Vienna, which established a 20-year truce between the Habsburgs and the Ottomans. And Evliya's account of his trip to Vienna is really one of the best-loved parts of the Book of Travels because it's so full of both day-to-day beauties and the horrors of the 17th century.
Yeah, for example, he's impressed by the organ at St. Stephen's and notes that it, quote, fills the lungs with blood and the eyes with tears. But he's also really taken by an operation to remove a bullet from a man's head and the doctoring that he himself receives to stabilize three teeth that had been hit by a javelin.
And he's kind of scandalized by social customs he sees when he's in Vienna. For instance, men and women socializing together in public, women socializing without their husbands present. But at the same time, even though this clearly disturbs him, he finds no problems talking with and even befriending individual Europeans. So after this epic trip to Vienna, Evliya moved up to Crimea, up the Volga, to Kazan, and then briefly back to Istanbul. These trips back to Istanbul are really, really short and come with large spans of travel in between. By 1668, he visited Greece. This is another really famous part of the Book of Travels because he described the Parthenon, which was then functioning as a mosque. And the reason why this account is so particularly important and why the detail is so valued is because just about 20 years after Evliya saw the Parthenon, the building was, of course, blown up when a cannon ignited an Ottoman munitions dump. I mean, sometimes it's easy to forget forget that the ruined Parthenon didn't used to be quite as ruined as it is today.
So true. In 1669, he saw the Ottomans take a Cretan fortress after a 21-year siege, and he had the honor of calling the first prayer there. And then in 1671, at about age 60, he embarked on his pilgrimage to Mecca, again dreaming of blessings, and this time from his father and his former teacher.
And it's interesting, too. He did, I mean, of course, for a man who traveled so much and who was so devout, it seems like he would have tried to get to Mecca earlier in his life. He did try to go. He had events waylay him. So this was a real lifetime goal to finally be making it to Mecca.
And when he did it, he went with 3 companions, 8 servants, and 15 Arabian horses. So Evliya ended up spending twice the time that a normal trip from Istanbul to Mecca would take to get there.
Taking the long road.
After his pilgrimage, Evliya settled in Cairo, surveyed the city, and made a short attempt to find the source of the Nile. But he died around 1684, likely in Cairo, though the exact date and location are still unknown.
Okay, so now that we've covered, in brief, of course, Evliya's 40 years of travel, what did he have to say about all these places? What made what he had to say so unique in the first place? And to a certain extent, his work is fairly formulaic. In towns or cities, he'll write about topography, fortifications, monuments, you know, what you might expect from a newcomer to a town. But he'll also talk about dress and cuisine, occupations, class structure, medicine, naming customs, speech, literature, hygiene, which, by the way, he was really pretty into. He had his slaves at one point clean out a public bathhouse for the benefit of the people. He just thought it was too gross. And then in the countryside, he sort of stuck to a formula too, kind of the in-between parts of his travel, after all. And he'd talk about the landscape, how long it took to get somewhere, the direction he was headed, and any high points like saints' tombs along the way.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents.
Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say "free this week" into your Xfinity voice remote.
But, and this is the important part, with all the cataloging usually comes an anecdote, a conversation he has with a local authority or a legend. In many cases, his is the only record of notable people or strange customs in a given area.
Because other people just didn't write it down.
And like any good travel writer, some of the neatest examples of anecdotes have to do with one of our favorite things, food.
Food writing. So, for instance, he broods over whether it's religiously acceptable to eat horse meat with Tatars and questions that a bit. And another funny example, he assumes that it's probably okay to eat giraffe meat with the people in Sudan. He actually writes, "God willing, it is permitted. I have not found a discussion of it in the sources."
He also claims to have found practicing cannibals among the Kalmyks, who are Western Mongols, who he says would eat their dead to honor them. And perhaps most memorably, he talks about a Circassian village custom of interring a dead body in a wooden box in a hollow tree. So if the bees made honey, that meant that the soul would go to heaven. But unfortunately for Evlia, he experiences this tradition firsthand after he accepts some rather hairy honey from a local.
Yuck.
And ends up learning that it's honey from a hive that was built on a dead man's crotch.
He has an appropriately freaking out kind of reaction to learning this. But Evlia Chalabi biographer Robert Dankoff also notes that the further out on the frontier Evlia gets, the more remarkable his stories. And I mean, I don't know if we should consider the cannibals and the honey ones kind of in that end of the spectrum. But some of the things that sound really shocking are, of course, true. He talks about female circumcision, for instance, but others are clearly made up. He includes fake trips to Western Europe, ones with ridiculously short timelines, especially considering Evlia and what we can already assume about how he preferred to travel, which was leisurely. And then also folk tales that are obviously not true, and they're presented as fact. And I think this is interesting, though. According to Dankoff, it wasn't like Evlia was trying to pull one over on his readers. He suggests that the readers would have immediately recognized these as fiction, just like modern readers would. And they were really just included to entertain, something that doesn't exactly fit, I guess, with our notions of travel writing today.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to just make things up, but I like it too. Something about that appeals to me.
Yeah, well, I feel like nowadays people want to know. They really want to know whether this is journalistic. Is it true? Or is it something that's
folk
made
tales
up and it has to fall in either camp? But the combination of the two does sound sort
makes
of
for good reading.
Interesting. So considering the importance of the Book of Travels as a geographic document, a cultural archive, and just a bounty of really well-told stories, you'd figure it would be widely available, but that is not the case. Though Evlia certainly considered an audience in his writing, likely people who were well-off, educated Ottomans like himself, that's really not how it went down. After his death, the manuscript stayed in private collections in Cairo until 1742, when it was given to the chief black eunuch, who was one of the highest officials at Ottoman court, and he realized that it was pure gold and ordered up more copies of it right away. Excerpts of these copies were eventually printed in Ottoman Turkish, now which is kind of like Middle English for modern Turkish.
Yeah, so, apparently pretty impossible to read for anybody but scholars.
Exactly. And it was translated into English as well. So the Book of Travels became known for Book One, which surveys Istanbul, but the document as a whole was considered pretty much unimportant.
Not worth translating the whole thing. So by the late 1800s, it was printed in its entirety. But at that point, the Sultan considered some parts too risky and had large sections censored. And that was really the only thing that people had to work with for about a century. Finally, in the mid-1990s, it was transcribed in its entirety into modern Turkish. Still, there are only extracts available in English. I mean, when I first learned about this guy, I immediately checked my library expecting to be able to find a copy, and then I learned, like, good luck. But another holdup with people, I guess, studying the whole manuscript, studying the whole piece of literature, is it's really huge. In his biography of Evliya, Robert Dankoff writes that, quote, "The gigantic scope of the work has deterred investigators from analyzing its structure beyond a mere enumeration of its basic contents. Characteristically, scholars have approached the Sayahatnami as though it were a huge mine with numerous unconnected passageways." So what I take away from this is that because it does have so many relevant details to very specific areas of study like botany or food in, the Ukraine or something like that, people will go in and look for what concerns their own work and not really consider the whole work and the life behind it.
But times are changing, and Evliya is kind of on his way up. He was named a UNESCO Man of the Year in 2011, and a trail through Western Turkey now follows the first stage of his 1671 pilgrimage. And it's meant to encourage historic and natural preservation, promote sustainable tourism, and also to advance indigenous horse breeds.
Since it's a horse trail.
It's called the Evliya Çelebi Way, and I think you listened to a recording of a talk given by Caroline Finkel about this, right?
Yeah, it was a talk given at the Royal Asiatic Society, and she said that when she was scouting out this trail, you know, trying to establish it with a group of other interested people, they found that a lot of the local folks along the way not only still knew who Evliya Çelebi was, but still knew what he had written about their villages, you know, 400 years earlier. It reminded me, I don't know, maybe the best comparison we could make would be Lewis and Clark or something, knowing about the region they passed through if you still live in that region. But this is 400 years ago, which definitely puts a spin on the whole thing.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I have one final point, too, I want to make about travel writing in general. I was trying to think about what makes good travel writing. We've already established that we can't even keep, you know, a week of journals when we go on vacations. But I do like reading travel writing. And I think that really strong travel writing usually does have all of those details, but has a strong enough presence behind it that somehow it all feels unified without feeling like, oh, I'm just reading about what this person is thinking and going through. And I mean, what appeals to you about good travel writing?
Well, it makes me kind of think about what we were saying about Evliya. I mean, what really appeals to me is when a person becomes a part of a place. They're not just observing and, you know, telling you what they're seeing and what they're tasting and whatever they're doing. They're talking to people and not just talking to people, but maybe becoming friends with the people, you know, forming relationships with them and really becoming immersed in the culture. Because I think that's what makes a really good trip. That's what really makes me want to go on a trip, is knowing like, hey, I could become part of this place and this is what it's really like.
Well, and that kind of writing is what sets a good travel narrative apart from just a guidebook or something where it's just telling you what you need to go see. There's no personality behind it. And I think one of the reasons why Evliya is such a strong travel writer and why he is so appealing after all these years is that even though he was very, you know, an elite man, he was well off, well educated, he was devoted to his empire, but he stayed pretty open-minded during his travels. I mean, he would include stereotypes. But like I said earlier, he was willing to go meet people and talk to people and talk to the average people, too, and find out what they were doing. He didn't let it stop him from really experiencing a place. And he knew how to describe things, too. He's known for comparing things to vegetables, for instance.
Someone everyone can that's something everyone can relate to.
Exactly. Even 400 years later.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday. If you have heard an email address or a Facebook URL or something similar over the course of today's episode, since it is from the archive, that might be out of date now. You can email us at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com, and you can find us all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.